What's up, Kraken Aces listeners? You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
I mean, you did ask me, do you know how famous he is? And I vaguely know how famous he is, but I'm not involved in the YouTube world. But I know he's like, I mean, what, 11 million subscribers on YouTube has to be in the top 10,
I would guess. I would say just like culturally, he's probably top 10 right now, especially from like our demographic.
That's
and
wild.
Like what Barstool
I was. Wouldn't recognize him. Like I was.
He's just a giver. He just gives money away.
I was stunned. I thought he was going to be like this, like David Dobrik. Is that his name? He's like a hot dude in a way. I thought Mr. Beast was going to be a hot dude in a way. He's a very just average, normal looking guy who is world famous.
He bought $1 million worth of scratch off tickets and just did them.
Is that your dream? I feel like that. Like if you had to make a wish, you'd be like, that's it.
That's like hard work.
Well, he had to hire a whole warehouse full of people to actually like, and they didn't even scratch them off. They just scanned them.
It's the fucking Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory scene when they're opening, looking for the golden tickets. They're just all scratching in a warehouse.
Yeah. But he'll go through Twitch and just be like, oh, if this Switch stream does this.
Hold on. Like, you were on that.
Yeah, we were on it. It was like a Starry Nine stream with like Hubs and Carabas and Mr. Beast came in and like, I forget exactly
you
what
had
it
a scratch.
Was.
He had two streams and it was whoever scratches their head first gets like 10K or something.
Yep, exactly.
And it wasn't you guys.
And dumbass Hubs just sat there with his hands on his dick. Consensually, I guess.
The video, though, it did numbies on our Twitter and our Instagram. Owen got that up real quick. And
good job, Owen.
Then, you know, Sportsbook tweeted out. We got another like 1,000 or so followers across the platforms over the weekend just from that video alone.
9-6 suited. Can't be beat.
Yeah.
I think it was off, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he just flops two off, pair right in Helmuth's face.
Helmuth got to turn the king just for the tease.
It's so good like when stuff like that happens and it catches on and people start paying attention to poker a little more. And if Mr. Beast does one of those like heads up battles against Phil, you know,
Mr. Beast plays online, I'd like to say a couple times a week, like we do on the poker.
Oh, yeah.
With famous
they
streamers.
Play yep. $20,000 buy-ins.
Well, quote unquote, yes.
You don't think they are?
20,000 biscuits.
Well, biscuits.
We can talk about their money, I believe.
Okay, then.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's well more than that.
I remember Adam22, No Jumper, he tweeted something like playing a 25K buy-in with Mr. Beast and someone.
Well, Classy, who's a famous streamer, was playing with us a couple weeks ago, won like a flip-off for like mid five figures in that crew. So, and he was complaining about not getting lucky with our 20 biscuits. think you lucked out.
I do
right
appreciate
spot.
When rich people still get mad about $20.
It's competitiveness.
No,
like to lose.
I think we talked about it last week. It's like Helmuth can play a $1 million buy-in or a $400 buy-in and be equally as in tune and as focused in either buy-in. And I got to say, if I had his bankroll and bank account, I could not operate that way. I'd be Ivy without the money or the patience or the ability. I just have to play high stakes at all times.
Well, that's why he's where he's at.
Speaking of
Ivy, the king is back. He just won a 25K short deck tournament somewhere in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the best. So he's like two for his last two winning. Like two tournaments, two wins.
Yeah.
So they're playing live tourneys in Europe?
It was live.
It was live. They're running some series on Poker Go.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what.
I don't think
the
it's
name
poker.
Of
it's. Is it? Poker
no, it
Go?
Is on Poker Go.
Oh, it is.
Well,
they've done a great.
I mean,
job
they're Poker Go sponsoring it.
Got it. I was like, I haven't seen a single thing about it on Poker Go itself.
Yeah, it was on earlier today. Yeah. It's also there's decent time difference. So,
but with the live stuff, I know we flip flop every week, specifically me, but I definitely think the World Series of Poker is going on.
Back on, baby.
It's going on.
I think it's
going to
go on.
I'm with you. Think, you.
I was talking. I was talking to Jake. Do you think, and we talked about this off the air, but I think it's worth bringing on here. Do y'all think they're being a little crazy ambitious trying to do the whole 6 weeks? Like, shouldn't they just do like 2 or 3 weeks?
Oh, yes. Ben Mintz, absolutely.
I mean, it's just like, why are they doing that? Why don't they just have like a few things before the main, make it 2 or 3 weeks to make sure it happens?
They're
greedy as
they're
hell.
They're truly going no half measures. They're going all or nothing. As of right now, there's always a chance, especially due to dealer shortages, stuff like that.
Yes, that's the only way it will be squashed.
If they literally cannot staff
it. But with stuff like last week, Vegas Raiders requiring vaccinations for people, and Pfizer being FDA approved, so now you just say, hey, you need to be vaccinated. I think it's going to go down with the vaccinations.
Yeah, and
We were out in Philly. And for the first time ever, all the bars, every single one we went to, you had to show your vaccination card.
I just came into the city last week to get lunch, and they made us.
Yeah.
Really? In the city?
I was very surprised by it.
Yeah. I have not run into that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was able to show them a picture of it, but it was.
Yeah, I was fumbling through it. Yeah, the guy was like, yeah, you're fine, whatever. But like, still, it's just amazing.
I had to show, we went to Sugarfish, and we had to show, our proof of vaccination with ID.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was intense.
How was Sugarfish?
So good.
I've heard good things. Never been.
It's got to be like the best lunch deal for like good sushi around. It's like $48 and there's no tipping.
Why not?
It's all built in. Yeah, they build it in.
It's not bad.
It's like $40 you get for $48.
It's an omakase menu, so it's just, they just bring you a bunch of stuff.
Smitty, have you ever had omakase?
Yeah, for 48.
It's quite literally the best meal I've ever had. I went on the Upper East Side. It's like 14 different little sushi fish dishes with like truffle oil, and it's all fancy and shit.
Well, it's all different. They're all different.
Dude, it's unbelievably
good. I'm all about good sushi, but honestly, you lay down about 12 rolls of spicy tuna in front of me, that's good.
Yeah.
I could just crush them.
I was blown away. I was like, this is what good food is supposed to taste like. It was expensive as all hell. Very expensive,
right?
But
I mean, there's some places that are their omakase for dinner will be like $200.
Yeah, Masa's place in New York's like $700 or
$800. What's the Vegas poker place? That's all you can eat sushi.
Amaya?
Which
is Amaya?
Yeah.
Oh, I've crushed.
Great sushi.
Oh yeah,
great sushi.
Yeah, I will say I've probably been to 2 or 3 all you can eat places in Vegas that were actually pretty good.
Yeah, because they make it fresh. You know,
in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the sushi place we went to? That was really good too.
Zen
of Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
God, been there too.
God, I miss Zen.
Yeah. That's late night, open late night after you bag.
Or after you bust for
Or you go for
positivity, Nate.
Or you go for lunch and then back again for dinner.
Positivity.
I remember we had the what was it called? Fluke with the truffle oil. Yep. It was quite delicious. Jake just orders the entire menu, and I sit there, you know, just jerking off like, this is really fucking good food.
So good.
And then he wants to credit card roulette it, of course. And you don't want to be. The worst beat I ever took was like the first time I was in Vegas with, you know, $1,000 in my bank account. And I'm with, you know, Alex Rocha and his high roller friends. And we do credit card roulette, and I'm looking around. There's like 10 of us. I'm like, I can do this. You know,
how could I possibly lose?
Possibly lose with the good Lord looking down on my $1,000 bank account? And all, like, I can't even like just Alex Rocha's rich New York City poker scene friends just absolutely could not have run worse. I had to pay for like the $700 meal. Couldn't say a thing because it's one of those situations.
Like,
your card in. Yeah.
Maybe you talk to your best guy in the group, like, hey, can you spot me or like whatever for the rest of the trip? Maybe, but like you cannot not pay.
A single tear just rolled down my cheek. And
you were too proud to buy out. You're in it.
It wasn't even like really an option. It was like,
yeah, you can't be the one guy who buys out.
It's always an option. Yeah.
So that all being said, let's now bring on a special guest we have on the podcast today. Just booked him this morning because my mind is blowing up about this entire NFT thing. And I've been talking to him a little bit about it. He is a friend of the show. He is a purchaser of Kraken Aces merch. He also won a little thing called the main event once upon a time while wearing a Detroit Lions jersey. He lives in Las Vegas now. Welcome, Ryan Reese. Ryan.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
Not much. How are you?
Thanks for coming on. We have been obsessing over NFTs for quite a while, and then you DM me the other day, and you're like, I spend 12 hours a day studying CryptoPunks. And I was like, that is a lot of time to study one specific NFT that I have no idea how to even explain to my mother what it is. So, and then yesterday that dude bought a rock for $1.3 million. And for those who aren't aware, it wasn't an actual rock. It was a drawing of a rock for 1.3 mil. Can you explain, like, I'm five, what the fuck is going on?
So it's really just supply and demand, to be honest. Like, for the rocks, for example, there are only 100 rocks, and there are a lot of, like, really, really successful people that own them. So, like billionaires own them. So if you buy a rock, you're not actually buying the rock, like, the picture of the rock. You're basically buying to be able to be like in that community, to be like have that group of friends, kind of to like be in the group chat with those people, to network. That's kind of where, for NFTs, that's how I kind of look at a lot of the NFT projects, as like different communities.
So it's like an expensive fraternity.
Yeah, just a cool kids club.
In a way, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not even expensive, like, for like a lot of the people that are buying it.
Excuse me?
For the people that are buying it, that are billionaires, it's an easy transaction for them to, like, have some fun.
Yeah, and, like, this, like, million-dollar rock might seem like a lot to, like, most people, but to the people buying it, it's, like, less than 1% of their net worth for most of them. And some people, they might be taking a shot. It might be, like, 5% of their net worth or whatever, but it's more it's just like something fun kind of for these people. Like, a lot of people have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. They don't want to, like,
what about,
they don't want to just keep the US dollars in the bank, so they buy crypto, they buy NFTs. I don't know, that's how I look at it.
So what about the guy, he bought it for 5k 19 days ago and then he sold it last night for 1.3 mil. When he bought it for 5k, what's his expected return on that? And what do you think he thought was going to happen? And how unlikely or likely was it that it was going to, you know, go up 10,000,000% in the course of 3 weeks?
I would say super unlikely. I don't follow the rocks. I don't even think I knew what I didn't. I've never even heard of the rocks when he bought that. So Jeez. It's hard for me to really talk about the rocks 19 days ago. I've been following the rocks a lot the last like 3 days, and I even really contemplated buying a small piece of one with like a group of people that all pooled money together to buy one, but I ended up not doing it. But yeah, it's I don't know, like he obviously got really lucky, so don't expect to like buy an NFT for $5,000 and turn into a million, because it's probably not going to happen.
Right.
But yeah.
Say Barstool Smitty was cracking open his piggy bank and he wanted to get involved in the NFT game. Where would he even start?
So I would start by minting. So they have, whenever a new project comes up, they you can mint the project. So say, they just had Cyber Kongs the other day. It was like 0.07 Ethereum to mint one. So it was like $200. And now the cheapest one, I'd have to look, so don't quote me, but it's probably like $10,000 or something.
What project was that? I'll look it up.
Cyber Kongs VX. I didn't end up doing it. I actually was trying to, and I couldn't figure out how to like work it on with. It was on open or. Right now you can buy them on OpenSea, but when I was trying to do the mint thing, it like wasn't working and I was busy with my kids, so I didn't end up doing it. But yeah, there are a lot of NFT projects that you can get in really cheap, and the best way is to do it through like the minting process, because you kind of think of it like a lottery. Everyone mints one and everyone has the same chance to get the rarest one. So you could mint some project for $200 and get really lucky and get one of the rarest NFTs of that project. And then you can either choose to like sell it right away, or you can choose to hold on to it. But that,
how do you know if this certain project is going to blow up like a rock?
You don't. But you really just, you try to find good, strong communities. Like, there are a lot of projects that don't have any like influencers behind them, or they don't have like a strong community behind them, where like the people who created CryptoPunks in 2017, they also created Meebits earlier this year, and they're doing really well now, but it wasn't as successful as some people maybe thought that they would be. But they kind of had that community behind them, where when they did the Meebit mint, if you had a CryptoPunk, you just got a Meebit sent to your wallet for free. You didn't even have to buy it, but as long as you had a CryptoPunk, you just automatically got one.
But even those, right, at the start, they like if you had a CryptoPunk, you would get one, but you could also mint them. And then because they were obviously created by Larva Labs, there was such like bullish speculation on them that some of them like immediately sold for a lot because they were done by the same company that made CryptoPunks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as the Meebits were minted, people looked and they're like, oh gosh, I want to get one of the rarest ones. Maybe right. It'll turn out to be like one of the aliens for CryptoPunks or something. But they ended up not Bored Apes, which is probably the second best NFT project behind CryptoPunks. It's the second most expensive, second highest floor of all of the Avatar projects.
Yeah, the Meebits floor right now is 3.5 ETH. And I think Bored Apes is like, let me see.
So, Ryan, you have a punk. What is the end game there? Just hope someone wants to pay you $1 million, or
33,
you,
yeah.
Do you hope to make like $1 million off of it? Do you think it goes the way of Top Shot, where it loses a lot of popularity and people get bored of it? Like, what are we looking at 6 to 12 months down the line in terms of punks and other, you know, just random projects that are popping up and making people a lot of money?
So when I started getting into punks like end of April, and the first punk I ever bought, actually kind of funny, I sold to this guy Sobe, who's like a crypto influencer guy on Twitter, and then this week he sold that punk to OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr.
No, wow!
My first ever punk is Odell's profile picture on Twitter right now.
That's so funny.
And how much did Odell buy that for?
I do not know. I don't think that was a public sale. I think they did it privately, so I can't speculate.
I gotta say, it's good news when guys like Odell Beckham are hopping into the space. It's like back in the poker boom when all the celebrities wanted to start playing poker, and then they had like, you know, celebrity poker on Game Show Network and stuff like that. Anytime it gets mainstream, I guess that helps this community's bottom line.
Brings in new blood.
And I think poker and NFT communities are pretty intertwined in a lot of ways. And anytime there's just a lot of money being pumped into an ecosystem, I know it's especially good for you because you might get new blood at the games you play. And then I think it's just fascinating for a guy like me just to watch it all unfold.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And going back when I got into punks, I was a little bearish, to be honest, because the community seemed like it was all poker players. Mm-hmm. I'm in group chats with like a few poker players, and they all have a lot of punks. And then there would be like some slow days where there were like not that many sales. And I'd look and be like, oh my gosh, like the group chat I'm in bought like half of the punks that were sold on this day.
Yeah.
Like I would just think like, am I in an echo chamber? Like, is this just us? Is it not going to like really go mainstream? But then you see like yesterday Visa bought a punk. And that's why yesterday everything went crazy, because the company Visa bought a CryptoPunk to show their support for like NFTs and all that stuff. So then when I see stuff like that, I become a lot more bullish. But in the beginning, I was a little weary because I didn't want to like buy these punks with hopes of like selling them to other poker players for more. That doesn't seem very sustainable. So my strategy in the beginning was just to buy them and kind of flip them, but I didn't really want to have a lot of punks at once, just in case. I didn't want to be left holding the bag in case there were no buyers. So my strategy was like buy a punk, maybe, and then when I sell it for like a couple of Ethereum more, then buy another one and keep doing that. And I did good. I was successful. looking back, like all of I regret every sale I've made because they were all at prices lower than I would be able to sell it at today.
Right.
But hindsight's 20/20. You know, I didn't know that they were going to explode like this. So it's hard to really, I mean, the prices of everything of all NFTs right now are so high. It's hard to justify like buying a lot of them at these levels. But relatively speaking, I think CryptoPunks are cheap compared to a lot of the other projects, if that makes sense.
That's wild.
You guys have any questions before we wrap it up?
I mean, I got some poker questions. I got a poker
question. Oh, yeah, well, Ryan, yeah.
Yeah, I Ryan, mean, are you...
How's what, poker going?
Well, are you thinking about getting it? What are your World Series plans?
I'm excited, man. I live in Vegas, so this is my home base. And I really wanted to play last year, even though obviously it's best that we didn't because of COVID. But as a poker player, especially like a live poker player, I miss it. I miss the camaraderie and the tournaments and the fun. So I'm excited, man. I can't wait.
You played with us on Twitch a couple of weeks back, which we're very thankful for. Two questions. Number one, are you playing a lot of that fashion, like with buddies on that software? And if you are, or...
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, yeah. And two part is with the video component to that software, why do you think like no other sites are really picking it up? Like PokerStars or like, you know, World Series of Poker, like wouldn't it be beneficial to have that video component like next to you while you're online?
At least for final tables, yeah.
Yeah. So I have three little kids. So I don't play much poker for fun, to be honest, because I'm just really busy. So, but that was cool, and I think the video component's cool. It's hard because a lot of people are playing a lot of tables at once.
Yeah.
Like on a Sunday session, right. For instance, I'm always playing like six tables at once. So the video component, I mean, I guess it would you could still have it there, but it would be kind of hard. And I'm also like doing a lot of other things at once. So I feel like a lot of people would probably prefer not to have it. But for like a final table or something, I think it's great. For like early stages of a tournament, I don't think it makes that much sense. But especially because at final tables, there's a lot of worries about people like playing, having friends next to them, helping them for big spots or passing the account on to somebody else who's better than them to have them finish the tournament when they're playing for a lot of money. So I think like any sort of video component or like security questions or something in a spot like that is good for the overall integrity of online poker.
Yeah.
It's yeah, fair. For sure.
Yeah, that's a very rational explanation to yeah. a question that I just didn't have an answer for, but because I'm an idiot.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about that either. Yeah. Yeah. Like just the number of tables people play, just the software would right. just be unbearable.
We're old and we only play a couple now. Yeah.
Ryan, are you playing it?
Yeah, but if you're playing like one table or something, like it's fun. It makes it more fun. And the reason that most of us played poker in the first place, the reason we got into playing poker was because it was fun. So anything to make poker more fun, I'm all for.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on and explaining this incredibly wild, bizarre world to me. I think I understand it about 5% better now. Hopefully the people listening. I mean, I do think it's the future and it'll always be around until the day we die. And I want to get out, you know, get into it on the ground floor. I'm just so perplexed by the entire thing. So appreciate your time and hopefully we will see you
really, really quick. So advice to somebody who wants to get in, I would just look around at different projects. There's a whole bunch of different projects. Some you're going to look at and be like, I don't like those don't look cool to me. Like a Rock, for instance, there's like a lot of really wealthy people that are just like, nope, like I don't want the Rock. It doesn't do it for me. I want a Punk or I want an Ape or I want a Fidenza or whatever they want. So I would say just look at the projects. And when you find one that fits within your budget that you like, just buy it. And then you kind of start from a, like just as a, you're kind of in it for the art, as they say, as yeah. opposed to being in it strictly to make money. And then as you like familiarize yourself with it more, then you can kind of get your feet wet more or whatever. But it's a cool space. It's really hard to get started because you're like, gosh, am I really going to pay like thousands of dollars for this, right, for this JPEG? But yeah, it's probably not going anywhere, to be honest. So if you think you might like it, I would say go for it. Try to embrace it.
Yeah, and I guess before you go, keep buying my merch, man. You're the biggest purchaser of the merch so far. You've bought the t-shirt, so you know, if you want to just keep doing that, that'll be great.
I got you, Nate.
All right, Ryan. Well, we will hopefully see you out in Vegas. I think Ben Mintz signed up to be the babysitter, so you can come out on the town with us, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right, see ya,
Ryan.
Thanks again to Ryan for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter. He's a former WSOP champion.
Love hearing his enthusiasm toward the World Series, though. I think that's just kind of a contagious thing.
I mean,
everybody's just pin up, and the online thing is kind of everybody's, don't get me wrong, people enjoy online poker, but people are ready to.
I'm with Smitty. I've done a complete 180. I think it's just on full force.
Yeah, I think as long
So what's made y'all 180? I want to hear more. What, just the vaccine thing?
The vaccine. I mean, if people are, companies are mandating people to get a vaccine to do things, and it's legally, they're legally able to do so, especially with the Pfizer vaccine getting approved by the FDA, I think that's going to be a very much a no-brainer for everything to just try to work logistically as possible, because it eliminates virtually all of the problems with not all the problems, but like all the COVID related problems.
And even if it's 5%, and that's a high number, say we're going to boycott WSOP because they're making us, you know, WSOP won't really miss that bottom 5% compared to what they'll bring in by the amount of people who will go if they require it. I think there's way more people who would sit it out if they didn't require it than would sit it out if they did require it. Because I think even the most petulant of children who are anti-vaccine still want to play WSOP, and they'll suck it up and they'll do it. That's my opinion on it.
And not only that, logistically speaking, like the dealer shortages, I think that is the biggest problem.
Has to be.
Right. Yeah,
has to be. Easily. Has to be. But no, super interesting stuff from Ryan. I mean, Jake, like, so you're an NFT guy. You asked me if I wanted to buy your fat penguin. Pudgy penguin. Sorry, I didn't mean to fat shame your penguin. You've been making money hand over fist on this shit. I put you on the spot.
Yeah. Not like some. I've made some.
Do you understand it, or do you just know if you buy and sell, it's profitable?
I'm trying to understand it more. But I think a mistake that, and I've, like, I got into it, I would say, in February, and honestly, like, I saw a tweet yesterday, I think it was actually by Gary V, that was completely relatable, where he's like, it's kind of like a casino, or it's like betting on, it's like, you know, sports betting online. It's like, it's so accessible, and it's so easy to do, and it's pretty addicting.
Yeah.
And it's fun, that once you get started, you, like, kind of look for other things to buy, other projects, other things to mint, like Ryan was talking about.
So there's like
what you want to get in on it. And throughout, you know, there's, when I got in, it was probably the start or the beginning of a bull cycle for NFTs, and then it completely died off, but it moves really quickly. And I mean, the last month or so has been, you know, basically like things that I had bought 3 or 4 months before, a lot of them just sold for a profit. I mean, it's been fun. Like, I haven't been playing any poker, and it's just been like a nice change up to like do some research into like some of this stuff. And
is a lot of it, though, or not a lot of it, some of it, I was looking at different projects, as I guess they're called, and there was like a wiener dog one, and I was like, oh, those are cute as hell. And so all I need is like a bunch of people to also think they're cute as hell. And then in 2 months, I'm really rich, because a lot of people think wiener dogs are cute.
Yeah, but I wouldn't expect to be really rich.
Sure, not really rich. But is that the premise?
Your perspective, what you should try to do, what you should expect is to buy a, let's say you buy, let's just say you buy 10 things. You should expect 9 of those things to be worthless.
Okay.
If not more. Honestly, it's probably like 9.
So it's like shit coins. It's like crypto.
Yeah. I mean, it's like
people forget.
You should buy things and you should never buy anything that you can't with money that you can't afford to lose. You should expect to lose it. It doesn't mean you will. And so my approach has been like, all right, I'm not a professional in this. I am doing it. I would like to make money. So I don't try to go for like, unless I really have like a strong conviction on something appreciating several months down the road, a year down the road, however long, and I get the opportunity to sell it for a profit, I'll sell it. So I don't try to like time the top because, again, I'm not like a...
Okay, let me ask
guru
this,
with this stuff.
Let's say Dave Portnoy, he has a large influence, a lot of followers on Twitter and Instagram and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he saw a wiener dog and he was like, that's cute as hell. Your team Portnoy, if you have a wiener dog as your Twitter profile picture, is that all it takes to make is it kind of like Dogecoin where it's like people
it could definitely be
work for SafeMoon.
Yeah, well, it's he picked the hardest coin to get.
I know.
If he just picked something easier,
SafeMoon is so hard to buy.
It would have worked. But is that the general idea, or is there more to it?
There is more to it. Now that's definitely a big part of it. It being the community.
Yeah,
kind of like what Ryan was talking about. There's some communities where it's very strong. People are passionate about it. They really like the way everything looks. And then there's like the supply and demand and scarcity. Of different projects. For example, like in CryptoPunks, there's only 10,000 of them. There's only going to be 10,000 of them. But it's also like anyone can create like this wiener dog. Is this a real thing, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to change
like,
my profile.
Like, I can pretty much guarantee you for the wiener dogs, there's a set number of them. Let's say it's 7,000, 8,000, whatever. That doesn't mean that it does mean that they're more quote unquote rare than CryptoPunks because there's 10,000, but there's the history of CryptoPunks, which are considered to be like the first on-chain NFT, meaning like their first art project created on the blockchain. I think it's 2017.
Would that be like buying like an original Picasso or something?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It's the first of its kind, which years down the road will have quite a bit of historical significance, whereas your wiener dog project won't have that.
I'm gonna have an original wiener dog though, so I don't know what.
But yeah, if you like it, then buy it. Who cares?
You guys want to get wiener dogs?
Just don't expect to like sell your wiener dog for $1.3 million.
A
rock.
That's where my brain doesn't work, because who would buy a rock and say this is gonna be worth $1.3 million? So how can you definitively say my wiener dog won't be worth $1.3 million?
I am not definitively saying that. I'm saying that you shouldn't expect it to happen.
I'm not expecting
Listen,
it.
Listen, I hope that you sell your wiener dog for $1 million, but
Ben, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say I've never been more... I'm more confused than I've been in any poker game in a long time. But I am enjoying hearing about this. It's just my current financial portfolio is keeping me away from the $1 million rock, unfortunately.
Here.
I mean, that guy...
Wait till WSOP, though. We'll have it after that.
Which, by the way, do you guys know if you're going opening weekend?
I would think probably not.
It's creeping closer with every day.
Six weeks.
Crazy.
I think realistically with football and everything that's coming and props, sportsbook launch in New Jersey today.
Yeah, let's go.
My lifelong home state where I've lived for a week, getting the Barstool Sportsbook, and we've got a new gambling house in Hoboken, so I'm going to be kicking it up here doing a lot of that. But what I'm going to try to do is the main's like, I'm going to try to play that Friday, November 6th. I'm going to try to go a week to 10 days in front of that and play megas, play daily, whatever, play a bunch of stuff to warm up for it, and that's how I think I'm gonna try to go for like 2 to 3 weeks, like before the main tournament, or maybe two, we'll see.
Yeah, three.
Well, I mean
it's a long time in Vegas.
Well, maybe 2 weeks, but we're gonna, you know, we can stay at the M because it's a Penn property and Henderson.
Smitty will be out there for the Eagles.
Is it Halloween or the 24th?
Yeah, no, the Halloween game.
Because the Penn girl was telling me it's the 24th.
Oh, it might be.
Okay, she was like, I know the Eagles schedule. It's Halloween. I was like, damn it. I wanted that to be Halloween. That would have been fun.
It's all right. My entire schedule will be financially and kid logistically
responsible.
Yes.
And responsible.
So we'll see. Hopefully we can get out there for both the beginning and the end of the month. But
I mean, I'd like to go at the beginning. I'm not going to rule it out. It's September 28th.
Something like that, yeah.
I would love to do the all-in. I'll pull the schedule up.
The all-in or fold on my birthday, October 10th. Don't forget it.
Might just be a good, you know, fly in for an hour before the tournament. Do it, bust out, fly out. Make a day trip.
So do you all know, does WSOP Online in New Jersey and Nevada run Saturdays into the main, into series events?
Yes.
All right.
Also,
time to get to work.
How about this?
New Jersey runs several satellites a week.
How about this for the all-in, or it's not even all-in or fold. It's all-in firsthand, make the money or bust.
Yeah.
You can play multiple tables of that because they go so quick. You can just re-register and just get another table. So you can put yourself in that tournament multiple times.
So you can bust out of $5,000 and then go home.
Right. So you're not limited to just one entry.
Yeah, no, 10 entries, get one revolution, essentially.
There's
500, right?
It's 1,000.
Oh, it's 1,000? Yeah. Oh, even better.
Like re-entry?
Yeah.
Sweet.
It's a re-entry, which is phenomenal. Because, I mean, when you think about it, it takes 5 seconds to play a hand. And then you come back for day two. I think if I read they do that, like, for like a few hours, and then you come back at another time and start the tournament for real. So I think you can keep recycling, you know, just keep going through.
I know, it almost makes more sense that they, I don't know. I don't know how they would
play. I did say maybe
do it and then play with like the players remaining, and then day two, do it again.
Maybe. You know what? We should have done a little more research, but I think that's what I read. But now that Jake
It's done, I'm highly doubting it's going to be done correctly.
Like, I would 100% agree with you on that. 100% agree with you on that.
I'm curious.
No, you know, let's not look. Let's just go with it. I have no reason to fact check anything.
I'm looking at October 1st is the first flight for the 500, 5 million reunion. I'd like to play that. Friday. Now that you mentioned it, Nate, I would like to be there on that Friday flight. I got a fever, bro.
We will let everybody know what we're playing. By the way, this is the Kraken Aces podcast episode number
96.
I'm Barstool Nate. I won the big 50. That is Jake Toole. He finished 34th in the 2015 WSOP main event. That is Ben Mintz. He is the co-host of the Fantasy Football Factory podcast, and he finished 12th in the Durant Choctaw main event in 2012.
Yeah, I think 2018. I'm willing to go back to, now that we're talking main event, let's put the 75th in the main back in the bio.
Take out Choctaw and put it in.
I know Choctaw. I know Oklahoma is luxurious, and everybody dreams of getting to Durant, Oklahoma for the peak of their life. But I think with WSOP coming, let's put that
in. So the reason I, one second, the reason I can't do that is because I say Jake finished 34th.
Yeah.
So then what do you want to be? Like,
I admit I'm not as good as Jake Toole at poker. I'm okay with that.
But you finished 12th in the
main. I wouldn't put your main event finish as a reflection of that.
I would. I would. Joe Chung owned your life.
They did.
And then that's Barstool Smitty. He finished second in the Sunday 500 back in like 2007. And this is Kraken Aces. We are coming up on episode 100. Phil Hellmuth, possible guest.
Ooh.
Possible. I'm teasing it. I don't know if it's going to happen.
Episode 100. So if we're one a week, and this is August 23rd, Nate, by my calculations, the 100th episode could be right around that WSOP start.
Interesting.
Could it be a Vegas episode?
Maybe in person with Phil?
Maybe. I think there's some power-ups could like that. I think that's very sellable.
I think it would go over very well. We should have more merch by the time that comes around as well.
And then let's take this thing out west to Vegas.
And I think, and I'm not positive, I have to look into it, that I'm going to make a schedule and sell action on like a State Kings or something like that. So everybody listening, if they would like to, can buy a little piece of your boy.
Responsibly.
As I go and defend my big 50 title. Defend. I think I played the last time they ran it. Yeah. When I finished.
$505 million.
$500 entry, $5 million guaranteed. So should be over a mil for first, you would think, if they don't scrap it or, you know, whatever, or cap it. But yeah, it is. We have done a full 180 in terms of if the WSAP's.
Yeah, so you think it was just because the Pfizer thing 180'd it?
I think a lot had to do with just, you know, hospital beds and COVID and Delta. But now that they can require a vaccine, and I think the state of Nevada is doing shit like that, where it's like if X number of people are in a room, you have to require it. I believe that's could be a mandate currently, that it's, you know, out of WSOP's hands. They're like, well, and you just have to listen to the health advisors in the state of Nevada. And it would... it helps WSOP so much because they don't have to make the ruling now. You know, it's no skin off their back, and it keeps their people and their dealers a lot happier, I would assume. Because dealers, you know, they deal with everybody, you know. They're at a bunch of tables a day, so it's not just them.
Hopefully they can figure out the dealer shortage.
They need to pay those dealers very well.
Yep. So I'm excited. I'm going to make a schedule, book a flight, talk to the M Casino out there in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. The
100th episode in Vegas for the WSOP comeback. I mean, if you will, it is no dream. Right?
Jake, what did you find?
All right. So a cool little caveat to the flip and go.
Yes.
Is you get, it's called pineapple style. So you get three cards.
And you discard one.
And you discard one.
After the flop or pre-flop?
Pre-flop.
Okay, I like that.
I think. I can't imagine.
I would assume pre-flop.
And there's no re-entry.
No. I was 100% wrong.
There's two flights.
Flights.
Looks like it's 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. And you can play both, but you cannot re-enter. And there's no late reg.
No late reg makes sense. Yeah. Because you need a full table to
So you bust the 4 a.m. Sorry. 10 a.m.
See, I misread it. I thought they were just continually cycling out tables, almost like megas.
So they're also. Actually, I'm a little confused.
Yeah. See?
No, never mind.
Damn.
This is separately. They're doing single table flip and go. Flip and goes in the sit and go section throughout in the satellite area.
To get into this tournament?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Single table flip and go flights. Also available on demand October 1st through 9th in the Pavilion Ballroom Satellite Area.
Got it. It is on the morning of the second time we played the main event. They were running $1,000 flip and goes, no rake, into the main event. Right. And that people were just... I mean, I remember we had a rich dude at my table who was running over in between hands to try to, like, just to do the... He was just had so much cash to burn. He, you know, you got a 10K tournament ticket or whatever. If you're already in the tournament. So he was just running. It was the early stages of the main, you know, we're 500 big blinds deep. He's just sprinting over like with
his flipping guys.
Cash in his hand. Like, I want in. I don't think he won any of them, but he was super excited to go do it. They were just running them nonstop, rake free that whole morning.
Wow. Just don't pull what I did in 2009 and spend 14K on megas. Get in a 10K event, not play it.
Oh, you discard your one of your cards after the flop. I was wrong.
After the flop. Whoo-wee.
That's fun.
That's a whole new wrinkle.
I know. I like that.
Man, I'm going to have to stay for that. I'm going to have to.
Man, every time we come on this podcast, I just get so damn excited about the live poker. And it's just, I've been playing on the Poker with Friends app in a private game. And so at least I've been playing a little bit lately. And man, I got the fever.
I
got the freaking fever, and the only way to get it is the live poker
match. I've been watching more training videos. I'm trying to get better. I think I'm going to shock the world. I think it's time for Barstool Nate's first bracelet.
Do it.
I think I might win a bracelet for you.
I hope so.
Because you're not going to be out there in the streets like me.
No.
He's
going to be playing the cash.
No, he hasn't sat at a live cash table in 10 years.
You're right.
It's the weirdest thing about him.
Is it? No, it's weird things.
No, it is weird that you are a professional cash poker player and you have not sat at a live
so you just play online cash
table in a decade. That is the weirdest thing about you.
It's ironic. Wait, because online cash is about 1,000 times harder than live cash.
Right.
Like online live cash.
It's also quite literally 1,000 times faster.
No, that's true. No, I get that.
How do you not have a couple drinks in a casino and look over that 1025 table and be like, ooh, I just want to feel those chips in my fingers.
I mean, or you can just go next level now and just like play online on your phone while you're playing the live.
I told you how I know the last time I played live cash?
I think it was the Paul Pierce game.
No.
You were streaming the other night.
Yeah, Paul Pierce.
Although I guess that was probably right around the same time. Yeah, he was just, I actually watched that for a little bit. He was just all in every.
Yeah, he was.
But that's what he did. So I mean, I played in a underground game with him. Probably 10 years ago, maybe 9. So maybe that was
in
last
New York
time.
Or Boston.
In New York, and he's to my direct right. And at this point, like I had really not played basically any PLO, and it's half and half, and we're playing 25, 50, 100.
Damn,
PLO. And no. It was just 25, 50.
Sure.
But he would just like. You know, it was a table where there were just a bunch of limps, you know, a bunch of multi-way pots, and he would just make it 100 more. like
not even pot it.
Just not pot it. Just make it 100 more. Just like get some money in the pot.
Splash
like,
the pot, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
How did he finish?
I'm not sure.
How did Barstool Jake finish?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not even like that. The actual number I lost wasn't bad, but
were you a regular in those games and Paul Pierce showed up?
Yeah.
To one of them? Like,
yeah.
You had no idea?
No, I knew he was going to be there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I ended up losing like a 40K pot.
Ugh.
In pretty gross fashion.
Biggest live pot in your life.
Yeah. But I mean, 40.
That one hurts.
Yeah, but I think I was up like, 16 or 17.
You got to get back into these games. We need stories. We need hand histories.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you the hand history. I basically got it in with top set and an open ender versus like a seven or like a nine high flush draw. No, like no straight draw, no pair, just a nine high flush draw.
Just a naked nine high flush draw.
And the guy just, I was like, how many times do you want to run it? He just goes once.
Oh,
like
once.
I hadn't even shown my hand.
What? Fucking
he
confidence.
Just runs it once.
I love that out of him.
Yeah.
Just nails it right there in your face.
Yeah, I think he.
That's like the Tom Dwan Barry
Greene. The flush got there on the turn. Yeah.
My favorite, one of my favorite hands ever is like Durr is so young and Greenstein still has money. And he's like, you want to take any back? And Durr's like, no. And he just spikes it right in Greenstein's face.
Yeah.
Love that hand.
No, but I found out when I was at Borgata. And this is my fault because I should have known this, but somebody owed me money and one of my friends was paying me on behalf of the other person, and he gave me casino chips.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it wasn't, you know, it was like, I don't know, it was over 10,000. And you basically, I think if it's over five, you can't
cash them.
You can't cash it without, you know, there's a trail of where those chips came from. So I bring, you know, these 5K chips to the cage and they're like, dude, like where'd you get this? Because we know that you haven't played poker in the casino since 2011.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And so they're like, we can't give this back to you. Like, we have to like put a freeze on it.
Oh, so they can't.
Shut
give
up.
Cash, yeah. They can't give you the chips either.
Yeah.
And what, you have to like call friend of a friend.
Well, I had like my buddy who gave me those chips he was like, all right, cool, thanks. And then he was going back to Brooklyn.
Oh, God.
But jeez. Fortunately, he was like right outside the casino and like came back and we explained it and it was fine.
That has to happen somewhat often. People just paying each other.
Probably.
Or is that?
But like I mean, I don't like.
Is that a money laundering type of thing? Or I don't know. People throw around the phrase money laundering. I don't really understand how that works.
Yeah, people just think
a lot of people are saying like, about the NFTs are money laundering. Now it's like, I don't know how that could be money laundering, but I don't know enough about either side of it to make an argument either. People just love throwing that phrase around.
Yeah, I
it sounds strong.
I'm not a money launderer, so I don't know.
But that's something a money launderer would say.
I'm not a money launderer. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Like, why would you cop to being a money launderer when you can just be like, no, I'd like buying fat penguins.
That's a fair point. I had to launder that. To Ethereum.
I don't understand how money or anything works. I'm just glad that you guys are buying digital art and making millions.
You never bought any of those badass bulls?
I didn't buy a badass bull. Spider did. Spider bought one for $47 and sold it for over $1,000.
Sweet.
So Spider has been making money day trading NFTs on the low. I have to get into
that. You
got to
get him into...
I'm going to get a wiener dog. I'm going to get a wiener dog, unless they're too expensive. But I'm going to get a wiener dog. That is my promise to the listener, unless they're too expensive.
Okay.
But I think that's going to be
you're going to sell it for $1 million.
Yes. Or that's kind of how I am with stocks also. Like, it's all in or nothing with me. It's I don't sell for a little bit of profit ever. I either make a 1,000,000,000% or it goes down to zero. That's just how my mind operates. So
high risk, high reward.
Wiener dog or bust is,
I like it.
Is what I'm saying. That guess that'll wrap up today's episode. Thanks everybody for listening to today's episode. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. It is Cracking Aces with 2 A's. We have a lot of good stuff going up on there. Make sure to follow Ben Mintz and Jake Toole and Barstool Smitty and Owen. We will be back next week with a new episode. Owen, bring us home.
Thanks.
Oh, there it is.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.